Good morning. Welcome to First Unitarian on this Sunday, October 25th, 2020, a day that has never existed before. Welcome to this liberal religious congregation. Wherever you are in your spiritual path, welcome people of all genders, welcome people of all orientations, welcome to your church. We're glad you're here this morning. I'm Angela Herrera, the senior minister. I'm joined this morning by the Reverend Bob LaValle, our associate minister, by music director Susan Peck, our director of religious education, Mia Noren, is here, and we're joined by lay leader Kristen Satterley today. Our volunteer DJ running the service behind the scenes is Arnie Gullerud. Thank you to Arnie and to all of the volunteers who form our tech team today. They really help to create a welcoming virtual space. As we get started, Kristen has a few announcements to share.
Good morning, everyone. Let's watch a Halloween movie together. You are all welcome to join in a screening via Zoom on Friday, October 30th, hosted by our religious educators. We'll gather at 5:45 and begin the movie at 6. Make popcorn, put on your costume. We're not allowed to tell you the title of the movie, but you may be able to guess it from this description. In Disney Pixar's extraordinary adventure, a boy who dreams of becoming a great musician embarks on a journey to uncover the mysteries behind his ancestors' stories and traditions. Mia Noren will be sharing the Zoom invitation later this week. We regret to announce that our Director of Finance and Operations, Cherry Jaffe, has let us know she'll be stepping down from her position. Cherry started in her role back in February, a million years ago, just weeks before the pandemic began in the US. So much of 2020 has not gone as any of us planned, and Cherry has found that she needs to go in a different direction. She has done wonderful work organizing the church's financial systems and operations. We will miss her in the church office, and we thank her for all she has done. We're looking into an interim solution as we consider making some changes to the way the position is structured, so stay tuned. And finally, our dreams for the future are made real and possible with your generous pledges. With 1 week to go, we are still only at 47% of this year's goal. Please submit your pledge as soon as you can. There's a link to the pledge form in the chat box, or will be momentarily, or contact the church office if you prefer a paper pledge card.
I invite you to join me now in kindling our candles and chalices. And I light them with these words from reading 455 in the back of our gray hymnals, the words of Dag Hammarskjöld. Each morning, we must hold out the chalice of our being to receive, to carry, and to give back. Let us worship together.
Good morning. Our opening hymn this morning is an old Unitarian favorite from Transylvania. This was written by Norbert Chopic, who was a Unitarian from the Transylvanian region of Romania. I'm putting the words in the chat box. This is Mother Spirit, Father Spirit. So please join me in singing. Mother Spirit, Father Spirit, where are you? In the sky song, in the forest sounds your cry. What to give you, what to call you, what am I? Many drops are in the ocean deep and wide. Sunlight bounces off the ripples to the sky. What to give you, what to call you, who am I? I am empty, time flies from me.
With me. Here we go. We are Unitarian Universalists. We are people of faith with open minds, loving hearts, and helping hands.
Good morning. I'm Mia Noren, the Director of Religious Education for Children, Youth, and Families, and welcome to the Time for All Ages. It's our tradition to have a Halloween costume parade on the Sunday before Halloween, and we decided that this year should be no different. So thank you to everyone that sent in their pictures and to Chris Paul and Susan Peck for contributing to this year's virtual parade. Have fun watching.
Gosh, so wonderful. Let's pause the chat for a few moments while we do our meditation and our prayer. Let's move into that meditative space. Find a comfortable position. See if you can let your body soften just a little bit. Turn your attention to your breath. Let your breath just be regular. Don't try to push it or pull it or control it. Just let it happen at its own pace. Maybe you lower your eyelids a little bit. Maybe you lower your eyelids all the way. Once your breath has gotten soft, picture a tiny dot of light within you. Maybe just an inch above your navel. You can picture it in any color or shape. Just choose a color or shape that feels right to you. There's no right or wrong here. Picture that dot of light. Breathe into that light. And as you breathe, watch the light expand. It's slowly growing larger with each breath. As you keep breathing, the light begins to fill your whole body. It fills your chest and your legs and your arms. You can feel that light in your toes and your fingers. See the light filling your body. Again, there's no right or wrong way to do this. Just see the light the way that you want it to look. Now, as your breath stays steady and relaxed, feel the light expanding beyond your body. Watch as that light begins to fill the room that you're in, making the whole room feel peaceful and comfortable. As your breath continues to be soft and easy, watch the light effortlessly expand beyond your room to fill the entire building that you're in. The light spreads with no effort, and it brings a sense of calm with it. Sit in that sense of expansive calm. Let's stay in this place for 2 minutes of silence.
Joy and worry, gratitude and sorrow wind through each of our lives. Here in this shared space, in this beloved community, we are buoyed by each other's gladness and help to bear each other's burdens. When the music begins, share your joys and then your concerns in the chat bar for us to hold together. If you cannot write in the chat bar today, we still want to know what's going on with you. Contact us at caring@uuabq.org. Now, let us share together what is in our hearts.
Be the moon, roll across the stars. See the seasons turn like a heart. Your parents' days are lost to you. This is your time here to do what you will do. Your life is now, your life is now, your life is now. In this undiscovered moment, lift your head up above the crowd. We could shake this world if you would only show us how. Your life is now. Would you teach your children to tell the truth? Would you take the high road if you could choose? Do you believe you're a victim of a great compromise? 'Cause I believe you could change your mind and change our lives. Your life is now, your life is now, your life is now. In this undiscovered moment, lift your head up above the crowd. 'Cause we could shake this world if you would only show us how. Your life is. Would you teach your children to tell the truth? This is your time here to do what you will do. Your life is now, your life is now, your life is now. In this undiscovered moment, lift your head up above. If you would only show us how. Your life is now, your life is now, your life is now, your life is now.
When we journey together, when we see each other and what we're carrying, we see so many joys and so many concerns. We see the joys of bluebirds returning and the joy of getting ready for winter, the satisfactions of these fall tasks, and the peace of moving on with gratitude and grace. The joy of snuggly cats. Joy of a big voter turnout, and joy for Ken Ginther as he finishes his surgeries. We wish him well. And so many concerns, the outcome of our election, for a stable and safe country, for the fires in Colorado threatening Estes Park, and so much more. And we lift up Mary Schultz, her friend Peggy, who passed away. May she find peace and may her family know comfort. We lift these joys and concerns up, as well as the joys and concerns that we hold in our hearts unspoken, but that are no less deeply felt. We lift them all up to the great powers of celebration and healing and renewal known by many names. We pray for Beatrice Mitchell as she struggles with cancer. May the loving thoughts of this congregation carry her through. As we approach this coming election, may we find our moral compass as a nation, and may we remember that regardless of the outcomes, we are surrounded by people who share our values and our hopes for a better country. May we remember that we all have a role in history. We pray for the wisdom and resilience to keep going on in this pandemic. May we see that there are still new things to learn and that there are still new ways to be. May we keep adapting and finding joy. In this time when death does feel closer than other times, may that remind us to live fully. May we receive the help and the companionship that we need. May we recognize it when we see it. So often, help comes in unexpected forms. May blessings pour down upon us and on our neighbors. May we be filled with gratitude, and may we extend all these blessings to others through our being in the world. And may we all be held in the heart of love. Amen. Blessed be, and peace be with you.
And also with you. Our interlude today is a song about deep listening. We've sung it a few times this month, so please join me again in singing John Corrado's beautiful song, Voice Still and Small. The words are in the chat box.
Our reading today is A Wake-Up Call by Vanessa Rush Southern from the book This Piece of Eden. It's a little longer than most of our readings, so I invite you to settle in. 1 year while I was in graduate school, a friend who was worried about my safety gave me a personal alarm as a present. This red box fit neatly in my pocket and had a button and a pull cord, like a grenade, both of which would set it off in wild peals of noise. I carried the alarm with me for a few months, but fortunately never did need it. The day I decided not to carry it any longer was the day I set it off in my coat pocket. It was a bitterly cold day in the fall, and I had spent the better part of the morning on a tour of a historic cemetery in town. I was exhausted and didn't notice at all when I set off the alarm while reaching into my pocket for a subway token. The whole train ride, I wondered what the alarm was about. Was there a fire? Were they testing some emergency system? At each station, the sound was the same. How annoying, I thought. When I got off the train, I heard the sound in the parking lot. People were agitated and looking around, confused. When I went into the supermarket, it was the same story. Everyone looked around this way and that, staring and wondering aloud what that sound was. A couple of them asked me about it, and I looked at them, innocent and ignorant, and said, "I didn't know. It must be some holdover from the Cold War," I mused to myself. What a great story it would make in the next day's paper, I thought. And then, amid my musings, I stopped to ask a stock boy where I might find the popcorn. He looked at me, nodding his head in silence and with hesitation, as if he were thinking something over in his head. "I'll tell you," he finally replied, "but only if you'll tell me about that noise." Completely tired of the whole business, I said to him in exasperation that I had no idea what that noise was about, and I wondered why so many people seemed to think I might. "Because, lady," said the stock boy, with the nonchalant indifference of one who had seen it all, "it's coming from you." Never has a face turned red as fast as mine did at that moment when I realized he was right, that this sound that had plagued me for the better part of an hour had indeed been coming from me. There in my pocket was that little red box with its little black button in the on position. How many times do we walk around with alarms going off in our pockets? How often does everyone else around us realize that something having to do with us is seriously wrong, and we just mosey along, slightly agitated in our journey? How many times in a day or a year are we completely oblivious to the effect we are having on people, even though it is the same effect on person after person? And how often would we rather make up the most elaborate excuses for why the world responds to us in the way it does, rather than take responsibility for who we are and what that invites into our lives? I just hope the next time I walk around with a personal alarm system going off in my pocket, someone is bold enough to look me in the eye and ask me what I am doing. Then, when I deny the charges, I hope they are able to say, without much pretense, that what is going on is, indeed, coming from me. And I hope the truth of what that person is saying will be as impossible to ignore.
We are in our final week of October, which makes this the last Sunday for our theological theme of deep listening. So far this month, I've preached about transformative listening. Bob gave a sermon about listening in beloved conversations. And last week, Christine encouraged us to listen to ourselves, to the wisdom within. Today, I want to talk about something that is a natural part of every one of us, but which can prevent us from all of these kinds of deep listening if we're not aware of it. I'm talking about our egos. There are many different definitions out there about what an ego is, some more complicated than others. At its most basic, the word ego is simply Latin for I, like me, I. It's the part of us that has a sense of being a self that is separate from everything else, separate from the computer and the cat and your person in the room with you, the table, all of those things. And in that sense, what we call the ego is not actually a thing, but it's a way of perceiving. In reality, we're not as separate from everything else as our egos would suggest, are we? Our bodies are made up of the same water, carbon, etc., as everything else, and they're part of the same cycles as other living beings. Yet we have this mysterious built-in sense of self. We say, I. The philosopher Martin Buber observed that we relate to everything either as I thou or I it. I thou, meaning like I you. That's how we relate to other beings. They are yous. And I it is how we relate to objects. Either way, whether we are relating to a being, to an object, we humans are relational through and through. And that's because of the ego. And if that's all an ego was, we could just leave it to the philosophers, right? I would just be a mode in which we relate to other beings and to the world. But instead, that I becomes elaborate. We develop an identity around it and a complex self or a complex sense of who that self is. When a person's sense of their self becomes their primary focus and they direct attention back to it all the time and they start to want their self not only to be the focus, but also to be better than other people's selves, then we say they have a big ego. I'll bet you can think of somebody who has a big ego. Maybe we're all thinking of the same person. The secret behind a big ego, though, is that it's built around a need to not be ordinary. It rests on a belief, that big ego rests on a belief that one must be better, stronger, more successful, more whatever than others, and that anything less than that is not acceptable. And so in this way, a big ego is built around a fear of inadequacy, around insecurity, and often around self-loathing deep down. An overinflated ego has disdain for the ordinary, vulnerable person within. That's why the biggest egos are often also the most fragile and the most ferocious. Challenge the ego that is very fragile, the one with that fear right below the surface, and that person will be very reactive. That ego turns into a monster, anything to avoid looking ordinary. The ego hides vulnerability. And that's true with the big, obvious egomaniacs, and those are easy to spot, right? But it's also true, often in sneakier ways, for the rest of us. In Rising Strong, Brené Brown writes, "Our ego is the part of us that cares about our status and what people think about always being better than and always being right. I think of my ego as my inner hustler," she says. "It's always telling me to compare, prove, please, perfect, outperform, and compete. Our inner hustlers have very little tolerance for discomfort or self-reflection. The ego has a shame-based fear of being ordinary." Here, I'll interject. There is that fear of being ordinary, right? And that's true for a lot of people, not just people with obviously big egos. It doesn't help that we are constantly bombarded with advertising and cultural messaging that says we are not enough just as we are. Brené Brown continues, "Avoiding truth and vulnerability are critical parts of the hustle. Like all good hustlers, our egos employ crews of ruffians in case we don't comply with their demands. Anger, blame, and avoidance are the ego's bouncers. When we get too close to recognizing an experience as an emotional one, these three spring into action. It's much easier to say, 'I don't give a damn,' than it is to say, 'I'm hurt,'" she writes. "The ego likes blaming, finding fault, making excuses, inflicting payback, and lashing out, all of which are ultimate forms of self-protection. The ego is also a fan of avoidance, assuring the offender that we're fine, pretending that it doesn't matter, that we are impervious." There ends the Brené Brown quote. Now, it's not wrong to have an ego. Remember, in its basic form, an ego is just your perception of having a self, I, and it's just part of being human. It's why our lives are precious to us. And because it makes us relational, it makes us precious to each other. In fact, in one story from the Buddhist canon, the ego is portrayed as the basis of compassion toward others in a surprising way. Here's how it was recounted in an article in the Buddhist magazine Tricycle. King Pasenadi, in a tender moment with Queen Malika, asks her, "Is there anyone you love more than yourself?" He's anticipating, of course, that she'll answer, "Yes, Your Majesty, you." But this is the Pali canon, and Queen Malika is no ordinary queen. She answers, "No, Your Majesty, there isn't. And how about you? Is there anyone you love more than yourself?" The king, forced into an honest answer, has to admit, no, there's not. Later, he reports this conversation to the Buddha, who responds in an interesting way. Searching all directions with one's awareness, one finds no one dearer than oneself. In the same way, others are fiercely dear to themselves, so one should not hurt others if one loves oneself. The Buddhist canon consists of thousands and thousands of stories, and through them, Buddhism arrives at the golden rule from many different angles. I think this is a really interesting one. So we all have egos, and that's not bad. The ego is only a problem when it becomes a barrier to connection, to growth, to authenticity, to self-acceptance, to love. So what we need is a strong, right-sized ego rather than a big, fragile one. What does that mean? The Buddhist teacher Robert Thurman says, the key in the Buddhist sense is not dissolving, but developing the ego into a more flexible and permeable ego. This is considered a strong ego, capable of both surrender and function. The weak ego is the rigid, defensive one. So a strong ego is capable both of surrender and function. It's flexible, it's permeable. If the ego is our sense of self, then to have a strong ego is to have a sense of self that's flexible. And I don't mean that in an extreme way. I don't mean that your sense of self has to change with the wind, but flexible in terms of being open, curious, accepting, accepting of our growing edges, as well as our maturity, of our ordinariness, as well as what makes us unique, of our vulnerability, as well as our resilience and our strength. It's usually easy to see when someone else's ego flares up, right? But how do we know when our own egos are getting in our way? Well, we can keep an eye out for those ruffians Brené Brown described, right? Anger, blame, avoidance, finding fault, making excuses, inflicting payback, and lashing out. We can watch out for those. In addition, one of my favorite ways to catch my ego in action is to ask myself, what are you afraid of right now? For example, I ask myself this whenever I feel nervous about public speaking, which I do. I used to drive the whole 8 minutes from my house to the church on Sunday mornings with such a stomach ache. And now that my commute is shorter, it's a lot less painful, which is a slight benefit of the pandemic. But I still ask myself when I feel nervous before a Sunday service, what are you afraid of right now? What makes us all afraid of public speaking or other ways of putting ourselves out there? It's that others will see that we're not that great, right? If I preach this sermon or deliver this presentation or try to start this new business or let my artwork be seen publicly or fill in the blank, others may see that I am not very good or am not good every time or that I'm still learning. And if we're more attached to our egos than to our other goals, it blocks us from sharing what gifts we have, from just getting out there. It keeps us from learning through failure, which is surely the only way to become wiser, kinder, and spiritually larger. Sometimes the things that challenge our egos are small in the grand scheme of things. Sometimes they even make good stories later, but they're still rich learning moments. In our reading this morning, Vanessa Rush Southern discovers that the alarm that's been going off for the last hour was in her own pocket the whole time. I sat down to brainstorm some of the moments in my own life that have been blows to my ego, or at least taking it down a notch. And some of it read like a litany of comedy. There was the night in Oregon when I called 911 because I thought somebody was hanging off the side of a building. And when the fire truck arrived and shined a light on the scene, it turned out to be a mural of a rock climber. Question your perceptions. Also on the list was the day I ran a charity 5K race. And I came in last. I came in so last that when I got to the end, they were literally rolling up the finish line. And I yelled, "Wait!" as I ran to cross it. Now, there had been somebody behind me for a while, but they gave up. That quitter was a big chicken, I told myself, obviously to shore up my ego. Another time I was running around the UNM golf course when a little bird did some cute loop-de-loops right in front of me. And as I smiled at the sweetness of it, yep, I tripped and did a full face plant in the dirt. "Are you okay?" an oncoming runner said. "Everything but my ego," I replied. I've also taken some face plants on the La Luz Trail and other trails. I know most of you are used to seeing me walk confidently across the sanctuary platform in high heels, but I will tell you, I've been waiting for 10 years to fall on the platform. But other things on my list get more at the core of who I am and how I want to be in the world. Like the time I realized when my kids were in high school that the time for mid-course corrections and parenting was over. And that while I hoped I would continue to grow throughout my life, the parenting they would remember from their childhood was done. How many memorial services have I led where the children of the deceased had a completely different experience than everyone who met that person in later years? In some cases, they may even have had children at different times in their lives, in two different phases, and it's as though the two sets of siblings had two different parents in the same person. Sometimes our growth makes our past shortcomings so painfully obvious. But the best relationships happen when we're open and we're permeable, when we're accepting, when we can acknowledge our face plants as well as our more gradual failures. Recently, I had a conversation with a member of our congregation who was near the end of her life. We had hoped that she would have many more years left, but it was not to be. And as I often do at end-of-life visits, I shared four things that people may want to say to each other as part of their goodbyes. The four things are, "I love you. Thank you for loving me. I forgive you. And please forgive me." These are things that cut right past the problem parts of our egos, and they go straight to our love for each other. "I love you. Thank you for loving me. I forgive you. And please forgive me." There are only a couple of minutes left in this sermon, and as I was writing it, I went, "Oh my God, Angela, how are you going to end the sermon now? It's the week before the election. You can't end the sermon on death, right?" And yet, I think what's true is that we are all thinking about such big things right now, such ultimate things, our values that are deepest to us, things that are at stake. And what could be more healing right now than this most humble, compassionate way of relating to ourselves and to each other? We don't have to wait till the end of anything for that. We can start doing it right now. And what I know is true is that regardless of what happens in the days and weeks to come, the world that we dream of is going to be built through that kind of care between ordinary people. Through care and through a lot of other things. But what I'm saying is that the world we dream of can't be built without humility and compassion and mindfulness about our egos. That's where my hope is. And you are precious to me. And it's good to be together.
It is good to be together. It is said that a river cuts through rock, not because of its power, but because of its persistence. We take our offering today with the vision of a community like a river, patiently shaping our world. You can make an offering online by clicking on the link that we'll put in the chat box. And if you prefer not to give online, you can always simply mail a check to the church. Let us now exercise the enduring power of generosity.
What is generously given is received with gratitude. Thank you on behalf of First Unitarian Church of Albuquerque and the Roadrunner Food Pantry. We're approaching the end of our service, and we're inviting you to stay for our breakout rooms, a kind of miniature virtual coffee hour where you can talk in small groups with your fellow congregants. And a suggested discussion question when you get into your groups is, when have you exercised a healthy ego? When have you exercised a healthy ego? And I'll put that in the chat bar. There we go. Let's return to Angela for our benediction and chalice extinguishing.
Oh, I love that question, Bob. Good one. Now we extinguish our chalices, but not the light of love, that we carry with us out into the world until we are gathered again. Go in peace, friends.
Stepped onto dry land.
long to drive.